This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Are you watching closely?
Every magic trick consists of three parts, or acts. The first part is called the pledge. The magician shows you something ordinary. A deck of cards, a bird, or a man. He shows you this object. Perhaps he asks you to inspect it. To see that it is indeed real. An order, normal. But of course, it probably isn't. The second act is called the turn. The magician takes the ordinary something and makes it do something extraordinary. You're looking for the secret, but you won't find it. Because, of course, you're not really looking. You don't really want to know. You want to be fooled. But you wouldn't clap yet. Because making something disappear isn't enough. You have to bring it back. That's why every magic trick has a third act. The hardest part. The part we call the prestige.
BFM 89.9, it's 7:39 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture. It is, of course, our supercut. It is Thursday and you are listening to Lynn, Arvin and Dash. And together we are unpacking magic on screen, magicians on screen, wizards, witches, sorcerers, all of it. And that is because, of course, Doctor Strange is in the cinema. Seemed like a good time. But before we get to any of that, any of it at all, can we all just have a moment for Michael Caine and that monologue? Because it's so everything. It's everything. It's the whole film and it's our whole show.
Is it safe to say that because of that monologue, that's the best movie about magic? I know we're calling it at the beginning of the show and we're supposed to do this like, you know, like an hour later. But because of that monologue, like it explains magic so well. Like it's so easy to understand. It's like it's borderline documentary. In less than 2 minutes. It should be, right? Like Michael Caine just explained magic on screen.
Yeah, I think it's one of the finest films ever made, and especially about magic. And that opening scene, just listening to it, it just sends goosebumps, just gave me goosebumps, right? And what's interesting is, like you mentioned, Arvin, you know, it's like Nolan, through dialogues delivered by Michael Caine, the Michael Caine character, explains what magic is, reveals his hands, and yet manages to make you buy into it and then hoodwinks you by doing exactly what he said he was going to do in the introductory monologue. It's perfect.
So, I mean, when we were talking about this whole show, right, our entire supercut, the first thing, in some ways, this is happening because I wanted to play that. Like, I was just like, you know what we should do? We should play The Prestige. And so, yeah, here's where we find ourselves. But I think that this is a good place to start, simply because we keep saying magic. And I think that now is a good time for us to show our hand, so to speak, because what do we mean when we say magic and magicians on screen? Because it's one of, broadly speaking, two things, right? In the case of The Prestige, and in some of the other examples that you're going to hear about, it's the David Copperfield stuff. It's the illusionist. It's the close magic. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's tricks, so to speak, how we would grow up thinking about that. But then the sorcerer, witch, wizard stuff kind of falls into a separate category. And those films are also entirely different. The effects are different. The stories are different. People have different powers. So when we talk about magic and magicians on screen, do we have a preference? And, you know, what are we talking about here?
I mean, for me personally, it's the magic and, I mean, like sorcerers and witches and wizards and mages and all that stuff. I've always seen the card tricks and the Houdinis as a subset of fantasy and a subset of magic as a genre as a whole. But which is also not fair to say because it's not doing the same thing. Like, it's not playing with the same kind of magic. It's not exactly sci-fi even. So those movies are more like drama and they're more like character pieces, whereas the magic with the wizards and the sorcerers are more fantasy, right? So I don't know. I don't know if it is a subset, but because it falls under the same sort of umbrella, it kind of gets overshadowed. But for me, I think of those things first. Like, I think of Lord of the Rings the moment you say magic.
Yeah, I'm with you, Arvind. Like, when I think of like the prestige type of magic, like when you tell me like magic films, that's not what I go to, because like for me, magic is like this whole you know, world building and awe-inspiring nature in terms of, you know, fantasy. It's like Harry Potter and all of these types of films. But it's very interesting because a lot of like these prestige type of films and a couple of other movies that I'll bring up later, it's very, I don't know, it's fantasy to a certain extent, yes, but it's also very grounded in reality. It's very, like, you know, it can be heist films, it can be character dramas, like Arvind said, and the magic is sort of like a sort of technique that they use, like all of us can do it, sort of, you know, that sort of approach they have. I don't know whether I have a preference. Probably, you know, a lot of my favorite films when it comes to this is more towards the Harry Potter side of things, but I do love the more real David Copperfield type of magic as well.
Yes, to me that they're completely different genres, and I am referring to that primarily in terms of how they look on screen. Mm. So not just the stories that they tell, right, but the way that they look, because the prestige kind of dips its toes in between, right? Like, it's got very fantastical elements, but it's also really just about rival magicians kind of trying to outbro each other on the simplest of levels. It's what it is. But when I think about magic on screen, and especially if we're going to use a word like magic, which has all those like fantastical connotations, I think that what a lot of people think of is spells and sparks and, you know, just the ability to do that. And those films look very different because they have, I guess, they really play into, frankly, CG. They play into a lot of possibilities in terms of wardrobe, set dressing. You know, it's a completely different look. And I think that that's why the gap between the two is so large.
I also think there's a quota when it comes to the second kind of magic. So movies like The Prestige, because if I remember correctly, The Prestige came out and then The Illusionist came out about the same time. And
poor The Illusionist.
Yes. Exactly, yeah. So no one cared about The Illusionist because that quota was taken up for the year. But then if you look at 2001, there was Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings at the same time. And people ate both up. Like, you know, there was room for both massive blockbuster films, both fantasy, both dealing with a similar kind of magic. So I think when you have the drama type, the more quote-unquote serious type or real kind of magic, there's a smaller appetite. I don't know why. And people are like, okay, so we'll take the logical side of things, but we can do with one. So we'll pick a Christopher Nolan and we don't care about Edward Norton's story or whatever. I don't remember the plot. I'm not even going to like good movie. I don't remember what that movie was about. So I think it's in a very small box, a much smaller box.
Right. And it's different look, like Lynn said, and it's also like different rules, right? Whereas like the Christopher Nolan type of movie, or maybe even like, let's say Now You See Me and things like that, they are very much, they don't have, they explain how it is. They're telling you that these are things that essentially, if you are as smart as them in that sense, or you have that their kind of technique and know-how, you can do it too. They are saying that this is what, like Michael Caine explained. Whereas in Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, there's no explanation. This is not based, so to speak, in our complete reality. It's a different world altogether, different rules. You don't question, how can Gandalf do a certain spell? You know, how can this wizard shoot sparks out of his wand? It's not because, you know, of this particular logic and he's trying to hoodwink you in a certain way. These people actually have powers and they're special beings. And that's a difference, you know, it's a very interesting difference between the two genres.
So we're talking today about magic on screen. We've clearly kind of laid out, right, whether we're talking about, you know, magic with magicians on stage or whether we're talking about fantastical magic, the stuff that involves wizards and witches and the like. We want to hear from you. What are some of your favorite films that fall into this category? Who are some of the people that you think have done it best, right? Have been the best on-screen magician or magic folks? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So if we started with The Prestige, we are going to be bookending this segment with something else that's kind of an OG when it comes to magic. Is a little bit of Fantasia.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
You're late.
A wizard is never late, Frodo Baggins. Nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to.
It's wonderful to see you, Gandalf.
You didn't think I'd miss your Uncle Bilbo's birthday.
What news of the outside world? Tell me everything.
Everything? Far too eager and curious for a hobbit. Most unnatural.
So happy.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that whole scene. It's all right. It is 7:49. You are listening to Popcorn Culture Supercut with Lynn-Arvin. And together we're talking about magic on screen. And, you know, some of our favorite iterations, some of our favorite performers. And I love that we have Gandalf because I wanted to talk a little bit about the performance of magic or the performance of being like a magician, a wizard, what have you. And Gandalf, or rather Ian McKellen, kind of is a perfect encapsulation of it because we get to watch him do it for, depending on what you watch, 9 to 12 hours. And you, at the start, he's kind of barely anything. He's sort of hobo-esque, right? He's just like riding through town with his random fireworks. He shows up when he shows up. There's no real evidence that the guy is a wizard. He's doing parlor tricks, right? Like the equivalent of parlor tricks for hobbits. Mm-hmm. And then later on, we get to see him flex. And I think that the variation between the early stuff, the fireworks, the pipe, you know, just that kind of thing, and the you shall not pass, the riding the horse with the light, you know, just all of the horse shadow facts.
You know,
so yeah, there are all these things, and you get to see the ways in which the idea of being a wizard progresses even in the course of one character, three films.
So I should have looked this up before the show, but is Gandalf based on wizards like Merlin, or is the look of Merlin based off Gandalf because of how old the Lord of the Rings books are? Because he looks like your stereotypical wizard. Like when
it's
you think
the beard, right? And the cloak.
The,
right?
The beard, the cloak, the pointy hat. Like he has everything with the, and the staff and the magic. So if you think of a wizard, if you ask anyone to draw a wizard, they draw Gandalf and then they put like moon and stars on his robe and stuff.
Right.
So I'm thinking, like, you know, did that come from a Merlin or did that come from a Gandalf? Because he is the sort of blueprint and the template. Also in that sort of respect, better than Dumbledore, right? Like, I mean, Gandalf has to be better than Dumbledore as a wizard, just in wizard terms and like magic sense.
I had a similar thought. I was thinking about that as well, this comparison between Gandalf and Dumbledore, because Gandalf is not the Harry Potter kind of wizard, right? I mean, he he is not the prestige kind of wizard. He definitely belongs in the Harry Potter world of genre, but he doesn't have like this big arsenal of spells which he can simply cast to make locks open all the time and make things explode easily. You know, that's not how he operates. He's more of like this old school, like Arvin said, pointy head kind of guy. And he's like saying stuff that you're like, what is this guy? Like, you know, what's this mumbo jumbo coming out of his mouth? But then later on, you realize like, wow, this old man was actually correct. You know, his power is tremendous, but it's not necessarily flashy all the time. You know, I mean, in the third movie, when he's Gandalf the White, his spectacular magic moment
spoiler
was...
spoiler alert.
Oh, yes, yes. It's a very old movie. Lord of the Rings, I'm sure everybody has watched it. But, you know, it's this spectacular magic moment where, you know, he is just like, he's turning his staff into like this mega torchlight, right? Essentially, if you want to make it sound lame and which scares the orcs away. But it's glorious and powerful. It's very different from Harry Potter. And I wonder, you know, you brought up this Dumbledore-Gandalf comparison. I think Dumbledore in the books was a little bit more like Gandalf compared to Dumbledore in the movies.
Dash, we can't go here. We cannot start talking about book and film Dumbledore. We're going to be here till like 10. You know, it's just going to take forever. But yeah, I mean, I agree in terms of the sheer power and magnitude of the wizardry. But more than that, in terms of characters, I think what I like about Gandalf, and this is a through line for Lord of the Rings, is that he's just a really good friend.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that Dumbledore wasn't always. And I think we'll just have to leave it at that. But I just think that Gandalf was such a good friend and used his power for good, you know. And I think that a part of it, and the reason why they're being compared is because of the whole father figure thing, but also because of the option for corruptibility and the comparison, right, to the people who actually took the corruption. I did want to say, though, that when it comes to the whole idea of Merlin and Gandalf, Merlin is the OG, I think, if you went from reading about magic to watching magic. Perhaps because Lord of the Rings is now such a huge cultural thing, right? Like, you hear the da-da-da and everybody knows where we are. Mm-hmm. You know the lines. But Merlin is kind of, in many ways, it's why... Merlin, I think, is the blueprint for what we think sorcerers can do.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Also, there's a kind of, with Merlin and Gandalf and even Dumbledore to some extent, there's this thing of them being sort of more humble than they should be, right? And that's a very common thing with magicians and wizards and sorcerers when it comes to portraying magic in TV shows and in movies. Someone like a Gandalf, like if you read the books, Gandalf is a very, very, very powerful wizard. Like he is, you know, he's immortal. He's been around for a very long time. Like he knows a lot of things. But the way he behaves is very down to earth. And he mixes with the hobbits, with the dwarves.
He mingles and mixes with all of the
common folk, quote unquote, without ever showing off his full potential and his full power, right? When he could, like he honestly could. And you see that happen with Saruman. And I think that's an important thing for characters portraying magic, because otherwise it would be limitless in a way that's boring, if that makes sense.
I think that makes sense. And I think that's what makes, you know, separates the good wizards from the bad ones, right? Yeah. It's like how they have these limitless powers, but they are not. And the thing about Gandalf, and you know, I just want to piggyback off what Lynn mentioned earlier, is that you just listen to that clip earlier and it just brings you so much joy. Like it just fills you up with so much hope and joy because of the way his character is and how he mixes, as Arvin says, with the common folk, you know, just chilling.
He's using his magic for fireworks.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, it's amazing.
So we've been asking you for some of your favorite moments or films, really, that feature magic in all its forms and some of your favorite people who've done it. I mean, as we'd expect, we've got a couple for The Prestige. So Asha and Jun Kidd both say The Prestige. Meanwhile, since we're talking about Merlin and Gandalf and the like, we have Jack who says Merlin and Ken Ling who says, I would like to call back to the TV series Merlin with Sam Neill in the title role. Setting and world building is pretty good.
Huh. So this is the one that with Sam Neill, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've seen all seasons or all episodes of that show. But from what I know, it set the trend for other or future TV shows like Once Upon a Time and other like smaller budget magic and sorcery TV shows. Right? They all follow that same template of you can tell a story of magic, but you sort of build on the characters along, which are as important as the sorcery and the wizardry in the show itself.
Yeah, and I think the person who commented, he used the word world building, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very important in these kind of films. And Arvin, I think earlier you were wondering why, you know, the certain, like the prestige type of films, like people don't have much of an appetite. Like, okay, I'm happy with one because it's Nolan. And whereas like the movies like Lord of the Rings and even like Merlin and all these kinds of things, like people want to see more. And I think it's because it is really about the world building. It's really this world that is so unlike ours.
Yeah.
And it's so... something so unique, so awe-inspiring, and we wish, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we want. You know, we want to lose ourselves in cinema, right? And we want to, you know, suspend our disbelief, and these kind of shows and movies really do that.
We're talking today about magic on screen in all its forms, whether it's tricks, whether it's wizards. Let us know what are some of your favourites. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we started with Gandalf. From one wizard to another, here we go.
I am Oz, the great and powerful.
We've done what you told us. We brought you the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West. So we'd like you to keep your promise to us, if you please, sir.
Not so fast, not so fast. I'll have to give the matter a little thought. Go away and come back tomorrow.
You've had plenty of time already.
Yeah. Do not arouse the wrath of the great and powerful Oz. I said come back tomorrow.
Oh.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Who are you?
Oh, I am the great and powerful Wizard of Oz.
I don't believe you.
No, I'm afraid it's true. There's no other wizard except me.
You humbug! Yeah.
You're a very bad man.
Oh, no, my dear. I'm a very good man. I'm just a very bad wizard.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Make it a powerful memory. The happiest you can remember. Allow it to fill you up. Keep trying, Seamus. George, your turn now.
Expecto Patronum.
A full-bodied Patronus is the most difficult to produce, but shield forms can also be equally useful against a variety of opponents. Fantastic, Ginny! Just remember, your Patronus can only protect you for as long as you stay focused. So focus, Luna! Think of the happiest thing you can.
Expecto Patronum. I'm trying.
I know.
Patronum.
It's good. This is really advanced stuff, guys. You're doing so well.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:08, and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Dash and Arvin on our Supercut, which is all about magic on screen. Magic, magicians, wizards, tricks, witches, the whole lot. We want to hear from you. What are some of your favourites? You can, of course, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And, you know, I don't want to belabor the point. We did just do a whole Supercut on Harry Potter, so maybe we can't keep going. But, I mean, for a generation of people, I think Harry Potter kind of defined what magic looks like on screen, right? Okay, Dash, you go.
Oh my God. See, I wasn't in the previous episode where you guys talked about Harry Potter. I was very bummed out about that. So I'm very excited right now because this, especially the first movie, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Sorcerer's Stone, was a defining movie in my life. Like that's the movie that inspired my passion for, one of the movies that inspired my passion for film. It's one of the movies that inspired, like really made me love reading, because after watching the first movie, I read all the books. I started reading the books as they came out and all of that. So these sets of movies are really like a huge deal for me. And what I love about Harry Potter and the magic in it is that it's not just about powers, right? Like what really captivated me is like what we touched on earlier, this the world building. And I don't know any film or you know, that has such rich world building, the way you know Harry Potter does, you know, where the attention to detail is in every single inch. Like magic is not just what comes out of your wand, but there's an entire world, the train station, even Diagon Alley. I remember the first time watching Diagon Alley on the big screen, and my eyes, I think I was 7 years old or something, kept moving left and right, up and down, scanning every single shop. Like from, and then there's Hogwarts and the staircases, even the staircases move, the trees move, people in photo frames move, the candy, the trees, creatures, everything. I mean, it's just, I don't know what else to say. It's, in terms of world building, it's just absolutely top-notch, awe-inspiring.
You know what's amazing about Harry Potter? Like I was thinking about, so I think there are two kinds of movies that deal with magic, right? So one of it is magic is the main concept or the plot. So magic is the destination and the destiny. And you either have to wield it or master it, or someone has to attain that magic. And then there are other kinds of movies where magic just exists. It's like the natural setting. So Lord of the Rings, like magic is just a thing. Like it's in the background. And it isn't the core plot at all for any of them. It's a completely background thing.
I want to say that after Arvin watched, you know, the marathon, you know, just hats off, one of the questions that he came to us with was, so what is the point of the magic?
Why Harry Potter?
Why any of this? Why does the magic exist? Do they have to learn the magic in order to achieve something? Are they our protectors? And it's so funny to hear like this other side of it now, because you're right? Like it's true that it really is just there. And I think that Sharmila and I totally took that for granted because we were OG watchers, OG readers, and so you just kind of accepted the world. But you're right, in most other films, that's not the case.
That's not the case. But also, for all the things that Harry Potter does, it's also both, right, in a way. So it is like the prophecy, the chosen one, and, you know, trying to attain the magic. But at the same time, like Voldemort wants to be like the most powerful dark wizard. But at the same time, it's just there. Like, it just exists in a world the same way we exist in a world. And I can't think of any other movie that balances both so perfectly, actually.
Yeah, and what's also interesting, right? Because we talk about the two different genres, right? The prestige type and the Lord of the Rings type. Prestige type is all grounded in reality and whatnot, and Lord of the Rings is this completely different world. What I love about the Harry Potter world is that it exists within our world. And the way it is designed, it truly makes you believe that there could be this world out there, because it could be real. I mean, like the muggles in the movie have no idea that wizards exist. So maybe we muggles here have no idea too, you know, like it makes you like think about things that way. And as a kid, I really did, you know, like I was like, you know, where's my Hogwarts letter? Am I a muggle? You know, or did the owls just not find my house? You know, things like that. And I think that's a very interesting approach to it, because it sort of puts you in a familiar place where you recognize it's a world like ours, which is the opening scene of Harry Potter and all of that, before it slowly guides you into this completely different world. And that's something that not many sort of movies tackle as well.
I agree. In answer to your question, Arvin, is Narnia kind of like that? Where there's just an other world where magic is just a thing?
I think Narnia is exactly like that.
Right? Because that's always the comparison, right? Like Harry Potter gets dinged for comparisons to Narnia, Lord of the Rings, older texts, older, not films, but older texts. And so I was just thinking maybe the answer is Narnia, that's probably the comparison.
What about Percy Jackson?
I suppose. I have to say Percy doesn't always make his presence felt on our show. But if you want...
For good reason.
For good reason, absolutely.
How many movies were there that one? Like, I don't think
something
any...
like that. We do have Rowan who said, Harry Potter, followed by, I couldn't continue following The Magicians because it got too dark. Has anyone ever seen The Magicians?
No. Nope.
So I think, though, that's an interesting one about what our capacity is for darkness when it comes to magic, considering that we opened with The Prestige and also that Harry Potter has its fair share of that. Before we close the chapter on Harry Potter, sadly, for this moment in time, because that clip was so Expecto Patronus-y, what's our Patronus? Do we know? Does everyone know?
Oh, I took the test and it's a black and white cat.
Lovely.
I think I got a dove.
Okay. Mine's very butch. It's a black stallion.
You have a cool platoon. Like it's
That's awesome.
Thank you. No, but yeah. I would take a cat. I wanted a smaller Patronus. I was a bit surprised by the presumed size of my Patronus. It's going to be like a full horse.
I wanted to have a more canine Patronus.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I had a more feline Patronus. But I guess it is what it is.
A dove dash. Lovely.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Because, you know, I went in, I want a lion or something. Typical. And then I get a dove. It's like,
We have lots of messages coming in that are quite diverse, I want to say, in terms of what it's covering. So Aisha says, The Craft. I watched it as a teen and as an adult. I enjoyed it both times. I think it's because of female friendship and rivalry. Fairuza Balk was cool and captivating too. The Craft comes up a lot in conversations like this. I think it's, and it's got that kind of cult classic status. Part of it, actually, for many of the reasons that you're talking about, Aisha, I think.
So The Craft, isn't there a new Craft on Netflix, or was that a movie that came out? Because I know that it sort of it has a cult following because it got lost in between Sabrina and the other one with the three, which is Charmed. Yeah, so there's Charmed, there was Sabrina, and then The Craft got somewhere like shoved in between. And I think that's where a lot of people don't talk about it, but I know that it has like a massive, massive cult following.
Yeah, I've never watched it either, probably because of that reason. Because I've watched Charmed and I've watched Sabrina, but I've never watched Craft.
So before we return to the witches, right, I just wanted to throw this. It's a bomb. I'm going to warn everybody. It's kind of a bomb. I think Danny is kind of being a troll and on purpose, and I kind of love it. Harry Potter was pure magic. All three movies put me to sleep. Just pure magic. And I'm like, wow, so much in there. Let's unpack three movies.
Oof. Wow. Someone needs to be obliviated, is all I'm saying. Yes. Like, you know, like definitely.
Yep.
Danny, I want to say, firstly, really appreciate the kind of prod for all us Harry Potter lovers. It's fair. But the other thing is, I want to say that if you just got through three movies, that we talked about this, right? What our favorites are. And a lot of the favorites tended towards the back half. So maybe, I don't know, if you want, give it a try, you know, and if you feel the urge to nap, then so be it. But, you know, give it another go. On the subject, though, of witches, we have Shamil, who says, I'm more towards modern wizard and witch series. For instance, Charmed, the old series, the first seven seasons. I'm Team Piper, by the way. Boo, Team Prue.
Huh. Not seen.
Not seen?
Not familiar.
Dash.
I'm Team Piper too.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no other team.
Yes, yes.
I don't think there's another team.
Yep, yeah.
I cannot comprehend being Team Prue. I think that Charmed is an interesting one because it came out and I associate it with a particular strand of television or a particular era of television in which there was like Buffy, there was Charmed, there was Angel. And so for a little while, it felt like magic was weirdly mainstream on our afternoon television, and also mainstream in a very particular way because it was... it had that very early noughties, late 90s television look, but then they were like drawing pentagrams and stuff.
This is just a theory, but you know what I think? It's because VFX got cheaper. And I know that's a very boring way to explain why.
It's not just boring, it's cynical. Come on.
But you know what it is, right? It's like TV could afford VFX, and the VFX that the movies used in like the late 80s and early 90s, all of a sudden it transitioned to television. And you could see them sharing like the same people working on the VFX because they'd have like the same colors, the same green screen.
Same creatures.
Mm. That's what gave it the aesthetic, I think.
And I'm very curious how I would, because I watched Charmed. Like I don't think I was a teenager when it came out. I was a kid watching it with my parents. And, you know, when they were watching, so that was the series they followed. And I was just sitting there like, okay, what's this? And I like bought into it. Like completely, because I'm not like, you know, at that point, 90s VFX worked like really, you know. So I'm very curious how the series would have aged right now, like the look of it, the feel of it.
So I have a theory about that. And this is related to witches more so than it is anything else. So we've been talking about magic and the various kind of magical not creatures, but people that show up as characters. We talked about wizards a fair amount. We talked about magicians, but we haven't actually talked about witches. And I think that witches actually represent a very specific brand of magical person, because they tend to veer. When you hear wizard, you don't automatically think bad, but you do witches. But at the same time, there's also all these strong undercurrents of like female friendships, female bonds and ties, magic that is specific to women. And so my answer, I think, to how Charmed has aged is probably the VFX is terrible. Let's face it. I doubt it has aged well. But I think that the larger themes of being people, sisters who have a tie to one another, but nonetheless are incredibly different, are bound by magic, but find themselves pulled in different directions. I suspect that that stuff has aged very well, because almost all witch-related content kind of has those themes underlying everything.
And they also have a lot of rules. Like, there's a lot of rule setting when it comes to, especially shows with witches. So you need you need a certain kind of potion, or you need a certain series of things to happen for the spell to work. It needs to be done at a certain time of day for this charm to take full effect. You know what I mean? And just thinking about that, it is kind of important for magic to have rules, right? Like, otherwise, you have someone die on a show or in a movie, and then it's like, oh, but actually he's immortal. He can come back to life because of the runes of Farnheim or whatever it is. You know what I mean? You can explain things with anything is anything is anything. And those shows particularly tell you that, no, magic isn't so limitless. Like, you need to learn it. You need to study it. And you look at something like Sabrina, which is like
exactly
sitcom-ish. Yeah. It takes time, like over seasons, for her to master like even a charm or a spell, which is kind of interesting if you think about it. And it's very different for, like, let's say, a sorcerer in a show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also I really like that idea that, I mean, like what you just brought up, Lynn, like how, you know, witches are always present. Because even in Sabrina, like you mentioned, where Arvin, you know, you say it's like sort of a sitcom kind of thing. And even like the newer Sabrina series and all, it's funny. But they are presented as like this dark sort of thing, right? And like, compared to when you hear wizards, it's always like smart and like they are so great and whatnot. And I think Harry Potter is one of those films where witches were just presented as regular, like they're just like, yeah, you have a wizard and you have a witch, and they are normal, good, happy people, and they are also bad, evil people and whatnot. So I find fascinating about Sabrina and all is that underneath this darkness and all, you get to understand their perspective. And you see, like, actually, perhaps, you know, whatever we know about witches, perhaps we were wrong. And I think that's something like a series like Charmed and Sabrina offers.
Keep those thoughts coming. We're talking today about our favorite moments of magic. Well, that makes it sound like we're just talking about good moments, but we're actually talking about magic on screen. Literally spells, wizards, tricks, charms. And we want to know what some of your favorites are in this genre. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So we haven't talked that much about like real life magic. And I think that that's partly because VFX and CG has made it less interesting. And our next movie is kind of an example of that, unfortunately. We have a little bit of Now You See Me 2.
Ta-da! So happy to be working with you. Please come in, come in.
Wait, sorry, how are you working with us?
Well, in as much as a magician who pulls a rabbit from a hat is working with that rabbit.
You see, you all want an audience. Need one, desperately. It's quite sad, really. Hence my ability to nab you. I, on the other hand, want the opposite of that. I just want to be, and I am, 100% off the grid. You know why? Because in a world of total surveillance, the only true freedom lies in not being seen. You can't control the grid from within the grid.
That's 15 years ago.
Don't get me wrong. I love magic. I dabbled with it, but unlike you, I was able to transition upward towards actual magic. Science, you may have heard it called.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
BFM 89.9. It is 8:26. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Dash and Arvin. And together we are talking about magic on screen, whether it's magicians, wizards, or just a girl finding herself crossing a bridge into a fantastical land. It's hard to clip Spirited Away, but I hope that everybody recognized that as the soundtrack. I mean, keep those thoughts coming, by the way. We want to hear what your favorites are. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. But I'm glad that we're now here because Spirited Away leads us to two things. One, animation, of course. But the other is just this idea of magic being neither good nor malevolent, just mysterious and pervasive. And the movie does that really beautifully.
It does it so well. Like, it's such an amazing movie. I was going to say that it's kind of, it's so interesting from like a cultural standpoint, how magic in quote unquote Western cinema is more fantastical and more innocent in a way. But then when you come to like Asian content, it's not, like you said, it's not good or bad, but it's kind of, it's not something to be tampered with. It just exists. And every action is a sort of reaction, you know, every use of magic has consequences. Disturbing magic in its natural setting has repercussions, that sort of thing. So it's not, it's kind of part of nature or part of the world, part of the setting itself, which is a thing you don't normally see in mainstream Hollywood movies, but you get it a lot in Spirited Away.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I do think a lot of it has to do with culture, right? Because Asian culture, a lot of it, like, you know, like it is tied to, let's say, our spirituality and all that. It's very tied to nature. Even like you have concepts like yin and yang, and all of these things are very unexplainable. And I think the way they incorporate like magic in the cinema is also very like, yeah, it's there. It is something that, you know, is important. It's part of nature. It's part of our lives. It's but it's not something that you want to mess around with, or it's not something that you want to, you know, learn and become powerful, or, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it's just there. And I really like that. And I also like that, you know, speaking of, like, you know, because we are talking about Spirited Away, that magic can be sort of like a, you can, these movies can be seen in like two levels. On the one end, you know, you can just enjoy it as like, you know, this magic, you know, there's a lot of creatures and beautiful, as you know, like the drawings and beautiful visuals and how they visualize magic and all these mind-bending stuff and surrealism. You can just enjoy it as that. And you can also look at a deeper level and what it's, what the message is, what the themes are, and all of it. And I think by using magic to tell these stories, it becomes more palatable, it becomes more engrossing, and it's not so much like, you know, this in your face, this is what we are trying to tell you.
We have a message that actually references mythology quite a bit. But before we get there, I also wanted to say that animation allows you to do magic on screen in a way that would look either ludicrous in some cases, or silly, or just kind of overly fantastical in others. I'm thinking here of Cora. I keep forgetting. Is it Line or Lynn? Is it Line or Lynn? Coraline?
Yes.
And how nobody, I think, wants to see a human being with buttons for eyes. No one wants to see that. And not just because it would be very scary and disturbing, but actually because I just don't know how that would look on a human face. You put that, however, in an animation, and you have that sort of, you know, witch-like quality, that magical, fantastical quality, although, you know, you could debate whether Coraline's magic. But the point is, there are things that you can do in animation with magic that you can't necessarily do in other ways. Like, I never really want to see a live-action Spirited Away. I just do not.
No, I don't think it can't capture that sort of like otherworldly, very, the lightness of the animation.
Yes, exactly.
It's just that lightness. Similarly, I love that we played the music and just the music to Spirited Away when opening the segment, because I was thinking about one of my favorite videos from the Nerd Writer, who's like this OG video essay guy and film analysis guy on YouTube. And he had this video about the sound of magic, and he spoke particularly about Harry Potter and how like every wand and every spell and every charm has its own signature sound. And I'm just thinking like how true that is, right? Because we have no reference of what magic is supposed to sound like. So it's all make-believe. It's all something that they have to quote-unquote conjure up themselves. And they have no sort of like baseline reference. And I'm thinking about things like Doctor Strange. So you hear sparks, you know that a portal is opening, that Doctor Strange is going to walk through a portal. You hear same universe, you hear the snap, and then you hear like rumbling thunder. You know that something's happened to like reality. Sauron's whispers or Sauron's fire, you know that it's such a signature thing. And it's interesting, right? They do the same thing for animation because they don't have the live action element. So they have to rely so much on sound and music to create the realism of the magic that they're trying to portray. Otherwise, it kind of falls apart so easily. It does a lot of heavy lifting, if you think about it, the sound and the sound effects.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Lynn, sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to read the message. Please go on.
Yeah, and I think it is like the sound part of it is so important. And I like how once a certain sound is associated with a certain action, a lot of movies that come after that, like I think like a lot of wizard movies and magic movies, they tend to follow a little bit. And I think that's why Nerdwriter, like, you know, really analyzed Harry Potter as well. Because you get so, especially if the movie becomes iconic, because we don't have anything that's real that is associated with a certain sound, with the sound of magic. Once a movie becomes iconic and they use a particular sound for a particular action, like I think a lot of other movies tend to use that sound for the similar action. And I think that's quite interesting, like the way when the sparks, when like a wand moves, or when you do a particular, why is it like the sound of sparks? Why not sound of something else? But I think we just so used to it that becomes how we register like a spell being cast.
Well, I mean, Lynette actually brings this up in a strange way, because we've been talking about it quite seriously, right? But she actually mentions both Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie. And if we're talking about signature sounds, that plink,
yep,
and the sound of the you know,
and
the
I
nose
can visualize
wriggle
it as you said it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just the gestures, the sounds that happen with that, with a spell. That's still something that we see kind of generified in that it's become a part of the comedy witch genre. It's a small genre, but it exists. Lynette actually also says David Copperfield, which is a nice one. We haven't actually talked about like your Copperfields and your Penn and Tellers, but maybe they have no place here. Jun is actually the person who sent in a lot of thoughts involving Asian mythology. So Jun says, if you want to start dipping your toes in Chinese fantasy, I would recommend Uproar in Heaven from 1963. It's based on Journey to the West. It draws on Taoism, Buddhism, local folklore, the opening scene to Beijing opera music, the cast walking like Chinese opera actors on stage. I watched this many years ago with my cousins. It remains a favorite. Nobody makes cartoons like these nowadays. The Flight of Dragons, 1982, how a 20th century man ends up in the body of a dragon. And is transported to a world of magic, wizards, knights, dragons. It's based on the novella Saint George and the Dragon. Let's not forget Malaysia's own Puteri Gunung Ledang, which draws heavily on local history and legends. If local film producers were given a free rein, they could draw on the rich local folklore and history. Do cartoons about fantasy and magic count? Because I would nominate Disney's Gargoyles. The basic premise...
Really cool.
Are gargoyles who are stoned by day, warriors by night. Oh, I can hear that. I can hear the theme. Wake up in New York City after 1,000 years slumber. It's a first for Disney. Their cartoons were always more saccharine. Gargoyles is dark. It deals with gun violence, discrimination, and death. Actually, all those things are true, but I don't know if that's selling it. But it's amazing.
I don't know if that's a synopsis of the show.
But I think all those are great examples of how magic and mythology really have a very rich lineage and link.
Oh, I love the gargoyle shout, because that it's so cool, because that's I think that's one of the few shows where you get like a perfect balance of really dark stuff. Like, it gets very serious in terms of the fantasy and the magic, but it's also so, it's so cartoonish, like it's so light and it's so fun to watch, and you get the best of both sides with that show, and all seasons are amazing.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy Gargoyles as well. Like, I grew up and watched like a lot of the episodes of Gargoyles, and I think Disney is a good shout, right? Because they do a lot of magic in their animated films, like even something like Moana and all. And it also ties back to what we were talking about, like the cultural side of things. Because in Moana, like, magic isn't like magic. It is not like Harry Potter type of magic, but it is still magic, and it ties into like their culture and all of that. And I think Disney does magic really well.
Agreed. We have some messages that refer to earlier points that were made. Well, this one from Farid made me laugh. In the early episodes of Charmed, they just chant, "The power of three will set us free," and then things just happen. Which is accurate.
Yep.
That's what you call a half an hour show.
That's the thing. Yes. Hard to contest. Meanwhile, we have Danny, if we remember. Danny, who did not enjoy Harry Potter, yeah. Or who did for its soporific effects. Danny saying, "Spirited Away was great, though." Thank you, Danny.
Nice.
We appreciate it. Meanwhile, we have Ken Ling, who's back to say, "You also cannot compare to the magical awesomeness that was David Bowie as the Goblin King back in Labyrinth and the fantastical adventures in The Neverending Story. And yes, I recognize Spirited Away's soundtrack as well. It's quite Alice in Wonderland-ish."
Like, just mentioning those movies, Labyrinth and Neverending Story. Neverending Story is one of the favorite magic fantasy. And I know what you're going to say. I know it's coming.
I wasn't going to say anything. I wasn't.
You have a different opinion.
I do.
Yeah.
It's okay. I don't have to share it. I mean, I think I didn't watch it as a kid. Actually, that's a through line in some of the messages coming through, that maybe magic is easiest to digest when you watch it as a kid. But because that's not just the Atreyu, like, I don't care. And I didn't.
And the Muppet flying dog.
I'm sorry, dude. I wish I liked it. I wish I did, but I did not.
Yeah, I'm with Lynn on this. Like, cause I watched that movie when I was like clearly the wrong age. Absolutely the wrong age, and it is what it is. I appreciate its importance for when it came out. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, I will admit, without the nostalgia, that movie falls apart.
Right.
Fast.
Mm-hmm. Also, can I just say that this is a near universal truth that nobody says "it is what it is" and means it positively?
No.
It's just, it never happens.
Yeah.
It's just, right. It's what happens when you're dissing someone else's childhood favorite. All right. Jesper says, "My favorites are..." Okay, I'm only going to read the one from Jesper that we haven't mentioned yet because it was a long list. So Jesper says, "My favorites are Bedknobs and Broomsticks, the fairy godmothers, cute, in Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella, the fairy in Pinocchio, Tinkerbell in Peter Pan, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Hocus Pocus, Sword in the Stone," a lot of Disney here, "Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Herbie, Mary Poppins and Mary Poppins Returns, Stardust, The Witches of Eastwick, The Witches with Angelica Houston, Greatest Showman, Dumbo, Death Becomes Her, Nanny McPhee, Matilda." Is Matilda magic?
Yes. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is Greatest Showman magic?
I think Matilda is more magic than Greatest Showman.
Yeah, right? That one I agree.
But
yes.
Matilda has the power of her mind.
And her imagination.
Yeah, is it magic? Okay, never mind. The House with a Clock in Its Walls, The Haunted Mansion, A Wrinkle in Time, Into the Woods, Once Upon a Time, Golden Compass, and then specific episodes, Gambini the Great and Circus Man from Little House on the Prairie, the Beguiled episode of The Waltons, the Magic Fire episode of Charlie's Angels, and Death Casts a Spell from Murder, She Wrote.
Oof. I'm still thinking about that. I'm still debating in my mind if Matilda was magic or not.
I have thoughts.
Yeah.
My thoughts are that it's not.
I think it is to her, if that makes sense. Does that count? Like, if it is to a character, like if she's imagining everything, does that count?
To me, Matilda is what happens when Carrie is wholesome. You know, yeah. So I just can't, I don't think that's magic. And I don't know.
Maybe not, yeah.
Matilda, agree with you, Lynn?
How dare you both attack me, okay? I'm the Matilda lover in this room. I'm defending her mind. All right, we have some others coming through. Let's see. Another vote for childhood. Aslan says, "Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory from 1971. Mm. I watched it in the 80s. No magic, no witches and wizards. But to a seven-year-old me, I was spellbound."
Willy Wonka?
Mm-hmm.
I would actually say that. Is he... Oh, I'm thinking about the Johnny Depp one.
This is the Gene Wilder one.
The Gene Wilder one. Mm. Yeah, so the Johnny Depp one, I think, is way more magic because that, like, leaps into fantasy, right? Like, his Chocolate Factory is actually, like, a living, breathing thing in that Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, so I think that what Aslan's talking about is the magic of watching it. And if that's the case, then I would argue in favor of the original.
The original, yeah, agree.
It's the same as Oz. Like, just because the effects got better doesn't mean the movies got better.
Definitely.
We have... Ooh, okay. I love this because I believe every one of our shows should mention Doraemon. Shamil says, the Doraemon movie, 1984, Nobita's Great Adventure into the Underworld... I really remember this one because the only spell Nobita can do was to lift Shizuka's skirt. I debate this, but the point is Doraemon.
This is the one where he goes to the land before time, right? Like, I mean, the literal, like, he goes to see dinosaurs and stuff in the center of the earth or something like that.
I'm uncertain, actually. I never know the extra, like, titles behind the big... Yeah, but, I mean,
Doraemon's a great shout. Yeah,
in general.
It didn't even cross my mind, but yeah, Doraemon's absolutely magic.
Bong says, I like Merlin in Trollhunters and Kiki Delivery Service, so Studio Ghibli getting some shine. Devan says, Genie, Robin Williams, the original, not Will Smith.
Yeah, okay, yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Great magical character. And actually, we're going to be throwing back to Aladdin next week, so expect more conversation about Genie and Robin Williams then. And then, just to close us off, our last message, that actually I've been saving because it's the newest. It's from No Emoji Moment, who says, everything everywhere all at once, nothing better.
Oh. Nice. I love that shout.
Absolutely.
Wait.
What?
No, but now I'm thinking. Now I'm thinking. Is that sci-fi or is that fantasy magic? Actually, can we talk about Thor? And how they explain...
Let's go for another 45 minutes, guys.
Another 45 minutes of this. In Thor, they explain that magic isn't magic. It's just evolved or elevated science.
Yes.
And science that we don't understand. And they sort of harness that science to make it seem like magic. It's like showing an iPhone to someone in the 1600s. It would like blow their reality and their mind. So in that sense, everything everywhere all at once is elevated sci-fi?
I think you could say that, but I think that the hallmarks of this idea of a person of elevated abilities, the one, you know, just the whole premise of looking for the one, that she has powers that live within her that they're searching for to elevate with their technology, means that she has magic. Does this mean I'm contradicting myself about Matilda? I don't care.
I was just about to.
How dare you, Dash? I knew it. But no, I think, is it magic? Perhaps it is, right?
It's a kind of magic if it's unattainable, right?
And it's interesting because that is a, I don't know if it's diff, this is like a subgenre in and of itself, because like even Arcane, the TV series, I'm not the animated TV series, they position magic as that as well. Like it's this bunch of super genius scientists who have, you know, used technology or like pushed technology to such the next level that it appears like magic, but actually it's just like super smart people. So I don't know, is magic really magic?
So this is where I wanted to end. Not so much on this tentative note, but actually more like, so what do we want to see? I mean, I think that a lot of the clips we've played came from movies that we honest to goodness really love. So that kind of sets the tone for what we like. But what kind of magic do we want to see on screen now that literally everything is possible?
Ooh, I'm going to think. Dash, you go first.
I think, I don't know. I guess I like all sorts of magic on screen, but I will never get tired of the Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings type of magic, because like that's my favorite genre, fantasy. It all, when it's done well, you know, it's so awe-inspiring. It takes you to a whole different world. I love the whole world building where every inch of the place is something so different, yet it feels so real. So like that, I think that will always have a special place in my heart. So I can keep watching those kinds of magic type of films and shows for the next 50 years.
I think it's the same for me. I want to see more pure magic kind of show. Something like Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Not where they have to share the space with our world or show us, you know, like modern society and all that stuff. I want it to be completely based in that world and have magic in that world as well. And also, if you're going to do that, have proper VFX. Mm. Like, that's the only thing that I ask for. If you have magic, please make sure you have the budget for the magic. Otherwise, I mean, if the magic doesn't look real to us, then it even that make-believe doesn't work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. I want more Everything Everywhere in the sense of stuff that is magical in feeling and nature, but that kind of intersects with, can we call it hard sci-fi? It's not hard sci-fi, but that intersects with speculative sci-fi, with this idea of like, what does it mean? Is it magic? Is it not? I kind of like that because it also allows us to go full fantastical in terms of what is available to us in the world, but then blends it with other ideas. So I kind of like that. And I think between the three of us, we've got a good mix. Let us know what you think. We've been talking this entire hour about magic on screen, as seen in the form of spells and wizards and magicians. What are some of your favorites of this genre that we've kind of semi-made up, but you know, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at movies@bfm.my. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.